Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, dedicating my skills and wisdom to you, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. What would you think we value most as children attaching to a primary caregiver? Love. It's the foundation of life, creating bonds, a sense of safety and security. Love is crucial to build confidence, respect, self-worth and fulfillment. There's connection, belonging and inner peace. We can have all the material possessions, the greatest education, cultural experiences, and money in the world. But without love, what does it mean? Beck Thompson has spent most of her adult life repairing the trauma of her childhood. A trauma many of us could not even imagine. A strict, cold, and abusive father ruled her early childhood home, dominating the one person who showed any love, her mother. That love was then stripped from her by a cult-like grandfather whose predatory abuse left her feeling abandoned and all alone, aged 8. Her memoir, Chasing Normal, documents those years and how she defied the odds to make something of her life. Beck, I'm inspired by your courage. Why was it important for you to share this story with the world?
I remember telling someone when I was 25 that I wanted to write a book. Even though I was still in the throes of my trauma recovery, I really wasn't there yet. I really just kind of started to, I'd spent probably 5 years airing the actual events of my trauma to counsellors over 5 years. And then I kind of moved on to, well, I'm a bit of a crappy person because of that and I wanted to change that. And I just, yeah, I remember thinking, you know, I really want to tell this story because I thought, and I guess it's probably why I called it Chasing Normal, is because I knew that by my upbringing and what I'd learnt to, in reaction to surviving the abuse, surviving parental neglect, surviving family abandonment, because I was very much ostracised once the abuse came out, that I thought, I know that I'm not in the parameters of my normal. I know that this is not how I want to live my life. And so I really fought to chase something that wasn't how I was living, and I wanted it to be my normal. So I wanted to share what I'd been through, and I knew it wasn't, you know, it wasn't unique. I knew that my story, the abuse, was not unique. And then the subsequent severe mental illnesses that I developed along the way was not unique either. But I wanted to share how I got out of it, how I moved through it, and how I got to my normal, where I could be okay. I could, you know, not live with this trauma, as I say, being the hero, being the dominant force in my life. I just didn't want that for myself. So I wanted to share something common and how I got through it. And I thought it might benefit someone else. They didn't need superpowers. They didn't need a lot of money, but it could be done. Yeah.
So Beck, how's the book been received since you released it?
Well, I'm not a marketing guru by any stretch of the imagination. And it was funny when I marketed, if I'm a pretty honest person here, so I'll just say it out loud, that I didn't really know, funnily enough, who I was really speaking to at the time. When I published it, I thought, well, it's a story, someone will read it, but obviously that's not how it works. I looked through the book and realised there was a very strong theme of relationships and connection, and that was really really the crux of my recovery, how I was able to get through my difficult times and realize I was worth something and realize that it was actually so many people just coming in, threading into my life. And one of the common themes of that connection and that presence was my teachers. And in fact, when my abuse started when I was 6 years old, it was this one teacher out of the three I had in that three-year period of quite strong abuse and neglect that actually showed me that, hey, I'm going to show you something different. I'm actually going to be the person who stands up and says, you know, someone cares about you, because I was very much, I had no other reference, no other proof that anyone cared. And so it kind of dawned on me, hang on a minute, teachers are an incredible influence in a child's life. And I'm a teacher myself. So I quote unquote should know that. But then I started sharing stories to teachers and educators across all levels. And it was really hitting something with them. And, you know, we're in this, schools are now taking on this trauma-informed approach and recognizing that kids don't walk through that door okay. You know, they bring their fear. I have a story that I share that I say they bring their fear with them. They bring their anxieties. They bring their pain with them. They don't just leave them at the door, walk in and go, right, I'm ready to learn now. Because I remember so many of my experiences that I absolutely brought them with me, and it showed up in my relationships, the way I connected with school, with my peers, with my teachers. And so I realized there was quite a big gap in sharing my unique story of how teachers really saved me. And it's been very well received, because teachers don't get this insight. You know, they get documented stories. They get the lecture-driven stories. They get the data. But they don't get the story. They don't get the opportunity to hear, what is this like for a child coming into my classroom, and how can I now show up for this child? So it's actually been really well received, probably more than I realized.
Sharing stories is how we feel connected to someone else, and it's innate as human beings to share those stories. It also takes a lot of courage. So good on you for sharing such a vulnerable and very traumatic story. I'm like sitting here thinking, well, you just said you didn't like the person you were in your 20s. So how did you then move from there to becoming a teacher whom you admired so much through your childhood?
I kind of love this story because I laugh about it now. I never dreamed of being a teacher, full disclosure there. I didn't know what I wanted to do because I didn't know who I was. And I didn't know, I actually just had no idea what I was good at. The reason I went to university beyond year 12 was because I knew that school was my safe place. And I thought, what better way to avoid life than to go back to school and hide in the library cubicles and try and get an ounce of love and support from the lecturers and the tutors at university. I was 19 when I went to university, just hoping for the slowest 4 years of my life, really. I did not know what to do on the other side of school. I really didn't. I had no idea how I was supposed to do life, because I just was given absolutely no skills or mentorship from my mother. So that's why I relied so heavily on teachers throughout. And I, like I said, I didn't recognize that until I left school. And that's exactly why I went to school. And teaching was the only thing I could actually get into at the time. This was 30 years ago. And I liked the subjects. But I guess when I started teaching, I was still in the throes of my own trauma. I hadn't, you know, I was 23, I think, when I finished. And I still really didn't understand the power of connection. I knew I loved the kids and I loved what I was doing, but I still didn't get it. I still not to the point, to the point where I get it now. But I certainly knew that me showing up and how I showed up was important. Absolutely.
We always take something away from our childhood experience. Were there any positives for you that you can look back and see now that maybe weren't there then?
Oh, was there any positives? Do you know, I kind of, it probably sounds a bit funny, but I have actually been asked this before because I suppose talking about my story so openly, and I just have this, I don't know, there's no shame with me when I share it because I know it's not mine. It's not my shame. How can I take that on when I had no control in how I was brought up? So I find it really relatively quite easy to share. And I guess the story that I always go back to and how what positives I had was that in this, I had, you know, a very cult-like experience from the age of 6 to 9. My grandfather had like a cult environment. So it was absolute strict daily beatings, very measured and restricted diet, you know, a lot of abuse across all forms. And we had to report just to go to the bathroom. And I, you know, I had an experience where I had to stand in the corner for 45 minutes because I was 6 years old and I didn't ask to go to the toilet. So extremely controlled environment. But the one thing I did, and I laugh about it now, is that I still broke the rules. I didn't seem to care that I knew I was going to get beaten when I took some fruitcake when they didn't see, but then they knew something was wrong with the cake. You know, it wasn't cut. I didn't use a knife. I just grabbed it and I was beaten for that. And so I guess I just took risks that because I just, there was something within me. I've come to sort of see that now in my later years of a strength of being able to do something in the face of punishment or backlash. And I was able to do that. And I think that's probably where I am now, is that I can still speak up and talk about things that people don't want to hear or that's really uncomfortable or just goes against people's preferred thinking. And that's who I am. And I think I've shown that kind of, I guess, courage all along, and it didn't feel courageous back then, but that's kind of my starting point whenever I think, well, what's the positive out of it, is that I guess I have the courage to share because I know it's transformational and I know that there's so many people that have lived a very similar life and just are stuck. And so, yeah, I guess that is the most positive that's come out of it.
You're also curious though, because you've actually gone seeking something better. Self-awareness and ways for you to become more cognitive of how you feel and why you're feeling that. A lot of people need a lot of help for that. I mean, I've paid for lots of different therapies over, you know, 20, 30 years. So for you to arrive at that point, you obviously had this something in your nature. I can't imagine when you were telling me about this little girl who was experiencing so much abuse. I don't understand why people do that.
Yeah, look, I don't know. My grandfather, my paternal one, had some very warped beliefs, and which I guess is where it sort of starts. You know, he thought he had a mission, and it was quite. I don't understand it. And that's the funny thing, is that even when I look back on you know, the perpetrators, which obviously were both my grandfathers, and then my family who didn't stand up to it, I always think there's something that's happened, like, and that's kind of why I don't take that shame on, because it never started with me, and I know that. They didn't, even despite the disgusting things they did, I know that they didn't just wake up one day and go, hey, this looks like a really good idea to abuse my grandchildren, you know, or my grandchild, you know. There's something that's happened along the line through many generations to get to this point, and it doesn't take away their responsibility or accountability, absolutely. But that was certainly one of the ways I looked at it, is so these kind of programs were instilled in me. These actions of my family set up messages and beliefs within me. And I guess one of my turning points was, do I have to keep doing that? Do I have to keep showing up in life reflecting the beliefs that aren't even mine? They were shown to me through experiences and modelled day after day after day for 18 years. But, you know, looking at the way they are and how dysfunctional they are, I don't actually have to take that on. And so that's kind of where it began with me. I'm like, well, I just have to strip myself back and peel back the layers. And it's taken, you know, I'm still going. I'm in a much better place now, and it's easy for me to do now. But back then, it was a bit, I guess, pragmatic. I still had to deal with the pain. You know, there was certainly, it wasn't just, oh, I'm just going to look at my behaviours and off I go. It was still dealing and grieving the fact that I just didn't have a mother who just didn't give a damn about what happened to her little girl. That's a huge, painful point that I had to deal with in order to be able to look at, you know, the other things in my life that I could change. I had the power to change things, and that was the thing. I had the power to change my own beliefs instead of taking on the ones I adopted without my control. But the pain, that's got to be processed as well. And so that's, you know, that's where the therapy came in really for me.
You now have children of your own. What challenges have you faced in becoming a parent, understanding the trauma that some children can go through for a number of reasons?
Gosh, that was such a big one. I remember saying to my husband before we were even married, I probably freaked him out. I said, if we ever have children, I'm not continuing this legacy because it's not theirs, because I realised my trauma was not my legacy. It wasn't something I should have been picked up and carried on with. And I felt an enormous responsibility to make sure that I dealt with my crap as much as, and look, you know, again, I'm still growing, I'm still learning, there's still layers that I'm seeing every day, every week. But I felt an enormous responsibility to at least be able to deal with the pain. Because I didn't have my mother around when I had children, which is painful in itself, not having that ideal. But I was responsible for my children, and I just didn't want that for them. I really didn't want that for my kids. So it was about, you know, constantly looking at myself and how was I going to nurture these children? How was I going to make sure that I show up and be their mum? And they know that I love them regardless, but it felt like that was my duty to make sure that hopefully the majority of my trauma would not just be passed on unconsciously, you know. And that was particularly difficult when going through my, I had severe anxiety. That was, my kids were babies. That was extremely difficult. But again, I knew that this was going to impact my children if I didn't sort it out. These are kids I bring into the world, and that's just not going to be their story.
They're teenagers now?
Yes. I don't know where that's gone, but yes.
But that's a difficult enough age. I mean, reflecting on that and what you've just said, how do you think they're turning out, and are you proud of them as young adults?
I first and foremost adore my job as a mother. That is, to me, that's my primary job. I relief teach these days because I want to be present with my children. And I was actually saying that to my husband the other day. I said, you know, I know they can get their own meals and one's got his license and the other one's on his way, but he's got a scooter. You know, they can do things independently, but it's really still important for me that I'm here, I'm present, not just physically, but emotionally, that they can come to me. And look, I had a situation with my youngest son last year that was absolutely terrifying to me. Unfortunately, a common sort of situation. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, teenagers don't talk to you. They just don't talk to you. But I was fortunate enough that he came to me and told me something extremely frightening. And I did have a little grateful moment that, gosh, had I not built these building blocks of connection, would he have come and told me something so personal that he was so scared of? So I hope, you know, I hope that I'm doing an okay job. I am very proud of my kids. They're great kids, yeah.
Considering you've written a book about your life that's very open and very vulnerable, I would think that that's the way you've been with them their whole life.
I hope so. And there's nothing wrong with that.
So you've taught them that being open and actually being able to share whether it's something they've done that's great or something that they've done that's, you know, maybe not so great and they're regretful of it, they can come to you and share that. I think that's a wonderful thing to teach your children.
I hope so. Yeah. Yeah.
It's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much, one, for sharing your story with the world in a book, but two, for speaking with me today and getting it out there to a new audience who may also connect and reflect on your story. Beck, you're amazing.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate the chat. It's been great.
Beck Thompson, author of Chasing Normal, sharing her harrowing childhood story and courageous path to create her new normal. If you'd like to know more about Beck's book or engage her as a speaker, all the details and links are in the episode description. Throughout February 2025, we're talking about what we teach our children about love. You can join the conversation on socials using the hashtag LoveLessons2025 and tagging us on Facebook and Instagram with your insights or stories. We'd love to connect with you. We're also running a survey, just 7 simple questions that you can respond to and maybe featured on our social media sites. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.